I'm here today with illustrator and teacher Daniel Hertzberg. Thank you for being on the show, Daniel.
Thank you for having me, Michelle. I'm very honored.
Could we start with you giving us a brief background of yourself and your work?
Sure. I grew up on Long Island in a town called Belmore, and very middle class suburb of New York City. I loved drawing. I drew every day. Everybody in high school were jocks, or they had their own groups that they hung out with, but I hung out in the basement in the art studios all day. It seemed like after every day of school, I would go down there and work. After all that time, I think I knew I wanted to go to school to become an artist or an illustrator of some type. I went to Rhode Island School of Design and graduated in 2003, majoring in illustration. After school, I immediately got as many internships as possible and started working full time since the day I graduated, pretty much. I always had a day job, and I always moonlit the illustration thing. And it didn't go very well for a while. My work was terrible. I tried painting and drawing. I did a lot of pencil drawing more than anything, and combining acrylic paint with it. I tried promoting constantly, but nothing was really working. I eventually became a graphic designer at the JCC Association, the umbrella organization of all the JCCs across America and the world. And I learned about branding, graphic design, and typography. And through working on all the Creative Suite platforms, all the programs, I learned to become a digital illustrator. And we did a lot of illustration, a lot of branding stuff we did at the JCC. And I learned how to do digital illustration, and I was having a lot of fun with it and tried to promote digital work for a time. And I was starting to get some work from it, and to the point where I was playing all-nighters and then going into work the next day. It was a little crazy. And that's when I realized I needed to leave my design job and become an illustrator full-time. So I did that, and I was approached by Gerald and Colin Rapp not long after that. And I've been working as an full-time illustrator since. It was around 2008 I became an illustrator full-time. And so now I live in Morristown, New Jersey, where I work in the attic of our house from 1900. It's very old and has a lot of issues, and we have two identical twin boys now who are 23 months old, turning two in just a couple of weeks. They are the joys of our life and the terrors of our life. So it's been an amazing ride, roller coaster ride, of working full time as an illustrator here at the house while being a parent of twins simultaneously.
Yes.
I know that's what we're gonna talk about a bit, but there's absolutely nothing that's happened in my life before this that prepared me for this.
Sure.
So that's the life story, I guess.
Okay, good. Before we dive all the way into the parenting thing, I want to talk a little bit about your work. Your work is very precise. And is that a way that you've always worked? Or it feels very precise to me. Maybe it doesn't feel that way to you.
I don't think it's too precise. It's certainly digital, and it's not a medium that I was comfortable with at all in college. We had maybe a digital imaging class, I think it was called. And that was maybe my senior year that I first took a Photoshop class. through my work as a graphic designer that I think that was paramount to my thinking and thought process. So if it is precise, I'm very honored that you think that. I try to sketch out everything. I try to do a lot of sketches for each assignment and find the best solution. I try to be conceptual. It doesn't always work out, so I've been doing a bit more exploring with Adobe Illustrator now. And Adobe Illustrator, you can do a lot of different patterns and transparencies and colors and variations. I'm having a lot of fun with that process now, and I think I'm letting color and pattern and shapes determine the illustrations a bit more now than I have in previous years.
I really love the way you use color. How do you keep your palette balanced? I mean, a lot of your work, it feels very rainbow colored in a lot of ways. But I know that it's not as easy as just throwing every color you feel like throwing into the piece.
Yeah, no, it should have some kind of harmony going on, certainly. And with color, I didn't always work like this, obviously. There was certainly a few years where I was working much more monochromatically. And I think I was getting sometimes less interesting jobs because of that. Because now I'm introducing more of a color spectrum. I think I'm getting more computer, more science, more energy related articles lately. Mm-hmm. I think from that. Not so much lifestyle stuff, but a lot of tech, a lot of science lately, which I love. These are fabulous and interesting subjects, and I wish I spent more time in high school studying science and math. But I never really did. But I think there's sometimes the most interesting content to illustrate. And, that's partially why I'm introducing so many colors now to the pieces. But like you were saying before, there has to be a sort of harmony with those colors. It can't just be a total rainbow. There needs to be contrast between the colors, and there should be some kind of flow with them. It's certainly more difficult with color, so many colors, but I try to get that in the sketch phase too. While I'm sketching sketches, I'll try a lot of different color variations to work those color kinks out, I guess.
And what is your process like for editorial illustrations, for brainstorming? And
for brainstorming, it's just a lot of sketches with pen or pencil on paper. I print out every article, and I sketch on and take notes on the articles, underlining certain phrases or words or key highlights in the article. And I do very quick rough drawings on the paper. They're awful drawings a lot of times, and I don't care as long as the idea is there. And then very often I use a lot of photography in my work, and I use my own references. And I take photographs sometimes of myself or my wife or even my children sometimes, friends, in which I put them in these, I'll dress myself in a suit maybe or something, try to light the scene, and I will pen tool trace around my body and throw it into Illustrator and throw in shapes and whatever else to come up with the compositions for each sketch. So the idea is that sketch looks fairly close to what the final will look like. I've used a lot of textures for things with photography too. I did a brain illustration recently where the inside of it had this. I photographed leaves that are in my studio and used those very natural bubbly textures on the leaf to create the inside membrane of a grain. So I use, like I said, I use a lot of photography in the work, but I try to do that in the sketching phase. And I try to come up with conceptual solutions for a lot of these articles. But I'm not the smartest guy at all. And there are so many much more fabulous conceptual illustrators out there. I think I'm relying more on color, on pattern, on Adobe Illustrator, but to come up with these ideas now. So that hopefully that answers your question how I do the sketching now. And it's been nice to do so many sketches for each article. It's happened before where the client likes maybe two sketches instead of just one, and they'll decide to use the second one as well. And that obviously increases the fee a little bit. But there are also so many articles that I've done that are very computer science related. Sometimes I look back at sketches I've done in the past for other articles, and I find lots of other ideas from those old sketches.
So is your studio just filled with sort of random things for reference all the time?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff. I've like for military, I've got plastic soldiers, plastic helicopter and planes, and baseballs, and a whole chest of stuff. I also have my wardrobe here of clothes, hospital gowns, suits, obviously. Overalls, a lot of things.
Do you actively seek things out, or is it sort of as you go through life and you see something that is just visually interesting, you just grab it and bring it back?
Sure, a little bit of both, definitely. There have been some, I don't have like a police uniform, but I have my old Boy Scout uniform, and I can sometimes just use that and then just edit accordingly. Make it feel like more like a police uniform or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about manipulating what I have, presenting the illusion that it's a police uniform or it's a tank or something. I don't. I think it's gonna. The collection's gonna increase over the years. I've seen some other artists that have a massive amount of stuff for reference, but they have just crazy things like swords and shields, very, very medieval type things all around their studio. God bless them, but I don't know where to find stuff like that.
And you're currently teaching at Montclair University, is that right?
Yes, yes.
And how long have you been teaching there?
I've been teaching there now for, I think, about 5 years. I teach with Chris Gash, who is a fantastic conceptual illustrator who lives not far from here. And he and I have been pretty good friends now for a while. And he approached me about possibly teaching there. And I jumped at the opportunity, and I've been very thankful for that opportunity ever since. It's been a lot of fun, and it's been nice to get out of the studio for once. Once a week, at least. And it's nice to interact with people, too. Which is something you don't get to do too often when you're by yourself.
Working in the attic.
Yeah. It's nice to get out of, to escape not only your own studio and space, but to escape your own head a little bit. Be with others that have different ideas, certainly about what's going on in the world. The kids also are great inspiration sources, too, and their drive and their energy and passion are something to behold. Mm-hmm.
Did you always hope to have teaching as a possibility, or is it just sort of a happy coincidence that came along?
I think it was a happy coincidence. I don't think of myself as a natural born teacher, though my my entire family. And I say my entire family because they all are teachers. Both my parents were, my sisters are. They stressed education to us, my parents did. So I definitely got terrific education because of them, and certainly some inspiration to become one through them. But I have a big presence in public. I don't think I have a big public speaking presence, especially in a room with many people. I'm certainly a very shy guy. But when the subject is illustration, the subject is editorial illustration, those are subjects that I know, that I own, I think. I've been mm-hmm. this for a long time. And if it's about a subject that you own, then I think your presence is much more at ease. It's something you live and die by.
Yeah.
So you can talk about it with the students, no problem. It was just more a happy coincidence more than anything. And I'm very grateful again for the opportunity, for a non-natural public speaker, a non-natural teacher like I am. It's been a great ride. And I hope to teach for a while. I certainly do.
I definitely think that a passion for the subject trumps public speaking prowess.
Sure, they are certainly. I also think too that being that it's Montclair State University, it's a school that every time I mention it to other illustrators, very few know about it really. It's a state school, but it has a blossoming illustration program, illustration animation. It's increasing every year. And we're trying to get as many guest speakers as we can. We have a lot there in the New York area, and many have agreed to come speak with our classes. We have great resources, obviously, with the Society of Illustrators so close by, and so many terrific illustrators that live nearby. Some of the graduates recently are incredibly talented, too. I think they can rival the graduates of any of the great art schools in the country, and try to arm them as best as we can, but also try to instill in them that they are sort of underdogs, and they are, again, up against the best in the world. And so they have to fight for the jobs that they are going to get. We're very proud of all the graduates, but I think the program itself is going to be much, much stronger in the next few years, and I certainly hope we rival some of the other art schools around the New York area.
That's wonderful. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully, but it's been exciting to be a part of this at the school.
So how do you balance your illustration work with the teaching and now with two almost 2-year-olds?
Yeah, I know we mentioned this earlier in a private conversation, but it's an impossible task, and you don't balance everything. I don't think there's an answer to that. And it's a struggle because the kids they need your attention, and they need love and support, and they need you to be there. My wife she watches the boys during the day, but we do have a nanny. My wife needs a break to watch them both all day. It's just, I think she's ready to pull her hair out of it at the end of the day.
I'm only watching one sometimes. I need a break.
Yeah, even one can be just enough, right? I know. But these two, like if one wakes up, he wakes up the other every time. If one, they fight all the time. Certainly they have these moments of happiness and love with each other, and they play with each other wonderfully. But if one takes a toy car away from the other, then suddenly it's World War III. And since I work upstairs in the attic, I can hear them. I can hear when it gets out of control, and I come down immediately, or throw things or whatever. I can hear everything, so I'm always here. I love that. I get to see my boys every day. I get to see them grow. Seen and heard them speak their first words when they start calling us mama and dada. They start standing up on their own. I got to see all of these things because I work from home and I have to see it. But there are interruptions constantly every day.
Yeah.
So we can't really keep a schedule either. Every day is different. Sometimes my wife has a lot of errands to run, and sometimes I pull an all-nighter one day, and I need to rest that morning. Every day is different, so I feel like keeping a schedule is just impossible.
Yeah. And how do you and your wife navigate that?
Not well. We haven't yet. We're still really trying to figure that out. My wife Jennifer, she's a chef, and so she has cooked a lot of the boys' meals. She's taken on that challenge wonderfully. She loves it, and she prides herself in cleaning. So anytime the boys spill like a single thing, it's cleaned immediately, which is a little crazy.
Is that just her personality even
Totally.
before kids?
Yes, totally. It's totally her personality. She's an absolute neat freak. Well, she's a neat freak because she was in the restaurant business, and she can tell almost instantly when a restaurant is a little on the grimy side.
Sure, yeah.
We've walked out of restaurants the moment she walks in sometimes.
Oh,
She
yeah.
goes to the bathroom first when she goes to the restaurant. That's where she can tell if the place is legit or not.
I've heard you should do that with daycares too. First, let's go look in the bathroom and see how clean it is.
Really?
Yeah, just recently I had read that as a suggestion for when you're looking for daycare.
Yeah, that's probably a terrific advice right there. But the same thing goes with restaurants too.
Yeah.
But anyway, as far as navigating a schedule, my wife and I, each like and even though each day is different, we know what their tendencies are now, the boys. We know what they want to do, what they don't want to do. They love walking. They love to be outside. So if it's not Jen, then it's myself, taking them outside at some point every day, letting them run around. All that running around will help us because it'll put them to bed a little sooner. For the first year, it was just brutal because they weren't sleeping the night. They were waking up twice or three times a night, and we could feed them a bottle that we have to warm up every time for them, and each one would wake up the other every night. And it's very touch and go. The boys were born at 27 weeks and
Wow.
4 days, so we were in the NICU for 3 or 4 months every day, to see the boys and to hold them and to read to them and all these things. While they were sometimes getting blood transfusions, one had collapsed lungs and a lot of bruises. It was very tough for us for a long time there. On top of this, I should mention they had heart monitors on them that we had here at the house. When we brought them to the house, we had to strap these things on their chest every night, just to make sure that they were breathing. They would sometimes go off in the middle of the night, and that would startle us and scare the shit out of us. So, anyway, I know I'm going off on a tangent here.
No.
It was a brutal first year or so, but now, even though our schedules are crazy with the kids, this is nothing compared to what the previous year was. So this is so much easier for us. And there are less medications that we have to worry about too. We're giving them so many types of vitamins and breathing treatments and vapors that we had to give them. is it both that bad? It's not. There was so many things. But now, this is a cakewalk now.
Yeah.
So.
And how are they doing now?
They're doing very well. They both, I think, still have asthma, but we've been told that they're going to outgrow that any year from now, as long as we just keep giving them daily medication. Yeah, they're great. They're great. They're gaining so much weight now. They're both 20, maybe 25 pounds.
Wow. That's pretty good.
And they're saying words constantly, new words. Isaac and Lincoln. Names. And Isaac just said grandma.
Oh.
In front of grandma on FaceTime, brought a tear to her eye. they're saying words now. They're speaking full sentences, even though it's their own language.
Yeah, right.
These are all good signs, though. Their ball is really rolling now, both of them.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, it sounds like they're about the same size as my daughter, and she'll be 3 in November.
Oh,
she's always been on the smaller side, but.
Sure. Was she born premature at all?
No. She was the most average baby, like in a good way, that you could ever expect. We were very lucky.
Yes. That average and normal is precisely what we're looking for. No.
Yes.
And doctors, obviously, they measure their weight and their height and all. I mean, any parent knows this when you take them to the pediatrician the first couple of years. They're constantly measuring them and making sure that they're within, trying to get to the 50th percentile, their age.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a struggle, but they are always increasing and they are getting there. They're pretty close to middle percentiles now.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm very happy for you and for them.
You are too, but thank you.
So prior to finding out you were going to have twins, had you intended to have more than one child eventually?
I think I wanted two children because I have sisters and I love them greatly. And I cannot imagine living without my sisters, growing up without them, being an only child. So I would want any child of mine to have that joy of having another sibling to grow up with, and to learn with, and to share with, to share memories with, and take vacations with, do all those things. So I think I always wanted to, but I definitely didn't expect for us to have both of them shot. I don't know any parents that have twins and then have more children after that.
What was your reaction when you found out that you were going to have twins? I mean,
yeah, I remember being in the room with my wife when the doctor was looking around and she said, "Wait a moment." I think, yeah, there's a second heartbeat here.
Wow.
My wife screamed it was a mixture of joy and terror simultaneously. And I laughed. I just laughed. That was my first instinct. I suppose it's like a nervous laugh, but I just, it was a
like,
joyous
what are you gonna do, you know?
Yeah, exactly. What on earth are you gonna do? But what a blessing. Oh my God. I will say it happened naturally too. Had tried. We had tried twice, actually. We tried IVF. We were struggling, and we did some research, and it looked like this was a possibility by doing this. We tried, and it didn't work both times that we tried. But it always happened naturally, I think, because my mother is a twin. So it runs in the family. Maybe because we just closed on the house, maybe it was very celebratory. Who knows? And I know my mother and my sisters are just ecstatic because my mother doesn't have any grandchildren till now, and to get two at once, she was just overwhelmed. So.
And how would you say fatherhood has impacted your work so far?
I will say that it has forced me to be more organized. Certainly not to make the most of my time while I'm working. I don't have any time to procrastinate anymore. And when deadlines are there, they have to be dealt with as soon as possible, because there are a lot of what ifs and a lot of trips to the emergency room that we didn't expect that could happen at any moment. And when those things happen, that you could miss a deadline because of that or something. I've been much more careful with my time. I've set my priorities straight a bit more. Simultaneously, I'm looking at all the books that they're constantly reading downstairs, and I'm getting a lot of ideas for now is based on how they're interacting with the books and how they're ripping the pages all the time, or they're not. The books that they cherish the most, the ones that surprise them sometimes, or the ones that just have a lot more nature involved, things that they see outside all the time. I've got a lot of ideas now for trying to get those come to fruition.
Is that something that you were interested in doing before you had children, or just has come up as a result?
Just totally just come up as a result. I didn't really have any ideas so much at all for kids' books. Some other illustrator friends of mine, like Keith Nagley, we've had conversations about his ideas, because I think he has a son too, and he got all sorts of ideas by being a father. I'm not sure if he had ideas before that. I'm sure he did, but being a father, you learn so much more about yourself and you as a parent, as well as your children. And I think there are all sorts of ideas for kids' books that are coming because of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably very natural. I'm sure a lot of other children's book illustrators are the same way. When they had children, time. That's where they got their ideas for books, perhaps. I don't know all the details about Marie Sendak or Carl, but I think that they're parents too. So,
what inspires you now that didn't before you had children? I mean, obviously, there's the inspiration to possibly get into children's books, but is there anything else that has come about?
I have a personal long goal, a long-term personal project that I'm working on about sharing our story about how they were born and all those trips to the NICU. A very special, special place and a very fragile place to be at. And we've made so many friends with all the other parents that were there, with their kids that were born very prematurely, along with our boys. We have great relationships with those parents and kids now, and I think I'm going to share that story with everybody hopefully soon. That's one project, but my children are just a constant source of inspiration, just for me personally. It just boggles my mind, all the things that they've gone through, they've persevered through. And it's motivated me to be a better person, certainly to be better with my time, to be there for them. And I want to take them everywhere. I want to take them around the world. I don't know when we're going to take them on a flight. But I can't wait. I just cannot wait. It gives me more motivation than ever. There are a lot of bills. There is a lot of stress. There are a lot of there's a lot of things to pay for, certainly with the mortgage and electric and cable and whatever else, and the food expenses and the nanny. There are so many things. So it's motivated me to find assignments, to get myself out there more, to bring home more.
Mm-hmm.
It's motivating more than ever.
And how do you balance work and your children and taking care of your own physical and emotional health?
That's a
$1 million question.
That's a really great question. I play hockey, and that's my only escape, it feels like. I do some running sometimes, but it's not on a daily basis as much as I'd like it to be. But hockey is my escape, and it's for an hour and a half. It's all you think about is the game. All you think about is the players you're playing against. And how are you going to score against this goalie? That's all you're thinking about. You have no cell phone, no email, no phone calls, no screaming kids, nothing. That's my great escape, is to play hockey. And I do that once or twice a week at least. The games are usually very late though. And that takes a toll too, because are up at 6 a.m. every day, and sometimes the games don't end till 12:30, 12 maybe. So, and you have adrenaline when you get home.
Yeah.
Can't go to bed until 2:30, 3:30 sometimes. Without hockey, without that escape, I don't know what I do.
Yeah.
That's hockey for me is. I need that escape.
It's great that you have such a clear thing that you can do. I feel like pursuing a career like this, it's really hard. It's really easy to get caught up in that you're doing what used to be your hobby, possibly. And so right. Your hobby and your work become this one giant thing that becomes your entire life. This can be hard to escape.
Yeah, of course. You're self-employed. You make your own hours, but you also sort of live it and breathe it and die by it. It's, you're thinking about illustration every day. You're thinking about art every day. You think about your images and your creations every day. You take it so personally because it is you. It's a passion. It's not just a career, but it's your passion.
Yeah.
So I think it's very natural, I guess, for us illustrators to just so one-dimensional about our work and just our bubble, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's it. But we all have to escape it sometimes, too. What about you, Michelle? Do you have anything in particular that you do to escape?
That's a good question. Well, I feel like this podcast has become that a little bit. It's something that's at least it's not the act of drawing and allows me to feel more connected to other illustrators. But our lives have been in sort of a state of instability for a while. My husband works from home as well, is semi self-employed. So whether it's, you know, financially or just the two of us being in the apartment, or the three of us being in the apartment all the time. So, you know, that I think that's something that I need to work on, actually, is finding a thing that's very outside of the house. And
Yes, it's essential.
I used to do yoga, but yoga is so expensive.
Really?
It's, you know, if you pay for it, like, per class, it can be anywhere from $15 to $20 a class.
Sure.
So it's awfully hard to justify that.
Sure.
Three or four times a week. But
when you're doing it, have you done yoga before? Have you how many classes? Like,
oh yeah. I used to do it.
Say.
Yeah, I used to do it pretty regularly when I was living in New York. And
right, to have yoga in New York is essential.
Yeah.
Mind
I do miss New York, though, I have to say.
Oh, of course. I know. I love Providence, though, and I know you're in Providence, and it's a perfect little city, I always found.
Yeah.
Able to get work done, but never feel like I'm missing a party or I'm missing out on something. In New York, it feels like working, you're always missing out on something.
Sure, yeah.
The amazing things that are happening. And it's a huge distraction.
Yeah, although I have to say I still feel that way. I'm just not close enough to have it be weighing on me too heavily, especially when I was in Denver. Well, you just can't go. It's not a choice.
Right. Oh, of course, of course. But living in the suburbs now has helped me and my work, I think, greatly. It's given me something to do in the evening time, for one thing. But when I was living in New York, it was like it felt like I was going out every night, even though I wasn't. I was staying in my apartment, but I was living with five other guys, and they all that came by, and there was always something going on every night.
Well, what would you say to another illustrator or otherwise self-employed person who is considering or is on the cusp of becoming a parent?
I would say a couple of things. I think it's important to achieve some goals that you have for yourself, for your work. Because when you become a parent, it's going to be harder to achieve some of those goals, I would say. You can't pull as many all-nighters anymore. Can't take things for granted anymore. Think you have so many responsibilities as a parent. There's less time for screw-ups and less time for. I feel like there's like less time for almost experimentation. I feel like I have to satisfy clients often now to make sure that I'm making a living doing this. I try to fill my schedule with work so I don't have these existential crises about my work or my style or my ideas. And you have all these crazy doubts when that happens, especially being a parent of two kids now and supporting the family based on this.
Yeah. Were you worried that having children would get in the way of your career at all?
No, I had confidence with that. I shouldn't say that. The self-doubt is constant. Self
Sure.
is always and ever. I guess I just didn't realize the difficulty with two. I guess it's tough to explain, but I guess going from zero to two is just.
Yeah.
An insane altered state. If I had one already and then had two children, I think I'd have a much, much easier time with it. As far as advice for anyone else that's thinking of having children while being an illustrator, it's going to be the time of your life, and I couldn't dissuade anybody ever. I feel like being a parent is one of the greatest challenges as a human being to do in your lifetime, but also an essential one. I think I've learned more about myself and my own capabilities through being a parent now. I hope everybody, I hope a lot of others try to do this themselves. I think they will have the greatest of times.
I think that there are probably more of us out there than we know. People who just don't make it known, or their children are older. But I feel like it's important for us to connect in this way.
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. What you're doing is a wonderful, wonderful thing, and we should have more of a connection. I think if as long as you're starting this podcast, I think it could blossom into a much bigger thing. A support group certainly is one thing, but or just an illustration discussion group. I'm part of a group similar to that right now. It's a lot of illustrators from around the country, Canada, even around the world, and we discuss everything together, in the industry, jobs, difficult clients, great news, talk about everything. It's been a wonderful support group for all of us because we don't have coworkers like a traditional office, but this feels like the closest thing to that, I guess. I worked full-time for many years at a lot of places, and that camaraderie, even though it was a small talk kind of thing, it's not something that anybody particularly remembers or wants to. There are a lot of other conversations that you have and friends that you make while being in the workplace. Kind of connections are important. But you're talking about the work, and you're talking about exchanging ideas, you're getting all sorts of inspiration from each other. And this group that I'm a part of, Hello Confidential, has been wonderful. I think something similar could and should exist for illustrator parents like ourselves.
Yeah, that's a really great idea.
It's just, we don't have to be alone. We don't have to be doing this alone. A lot of us are struggling to make this work. And I think if we talk about our struggles, I'm sure others in the group have experienced it, offer advice.
Even just people to tell you that, yes, what your child is doing is normal.
Oh,
yeah. You can get that all over the internet, of course, but it's nice when it comes from somebody that you have a more of a connection with.
Oh, totally. Yes, absolutely. My children are hitting now.
Yeah.
It's like the terrible twos now are happening. I'm not sure how to handle these types of things, but I'm sure there are others that have dealt with it. Everybody's dealt with it.
Yeah. Everybody. It was hard Our daughter went through a scratching phase, which was exacerbated by the difficulty in getting her to let me clip her fingernails on a regular basis.
Sure.
And, you know, the people at the daycare were trying to convince my husband that this is, you know, it's normal. They all do this sort of thing. And to some extent, you just have to wait it out, because if they're not developmentally ready to understand or to, you know, control their impulses, then you just got to wait.
Right, of course. But we're impatient, and we want what's best for their children, and we want to see them outgrow that phase as soon as possible, but it's never quick.
Yeah.
Scratching, interesting. Our kids bite?
She's been bit.
Sure, yeah. Our boys bite. Oh. And it's weird.
It's like they pick their poison, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. My mother even did some preschool art classes or kindergarten art classes, and she had some biters in her classes too. She's been bit before. But it's a normal thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of kids bite also.
Look what happens when I do this.
Yeah. Yeah, we're about to introduce them to class now. An early intervention class here with a lot of other kids their age, and we are kind of frightened about that and how they're going to interact, and if God forbid they do something to another child, totally frightened about what's going to happen next.
Well, what's nice with that is that they'll have each other for support when they're there, you know, as opposed to having to go by themselves.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Those are the kind of things that are difficult at first, but, you know, it's just the first of many things that you have to do that's for their good.
Of course.
They may not appreciate it right away, but.
Right, of course. How did your daughter handle going to like a classroom? Or did you have her in daycare before that?
We've had her in daycare for about a year. Before that, we just did babysitters. She's always been a little bit on the shy side. From like 3.5 months old, nobody else could even hold her besides her father and I, which was difficult. And there was crying when we would leave, but once we were gone, we would get reports that, 5 minutes after we were gone, she was totally fine. When we would watch her development progress, even just from one day to the next, when she would go there, like her language development would speed up, and it was just really amazing to see the difference.
Nice. Oh, that's great. We're looking forward to it in some regards, certainly, but lots of fears too.
Sure. Do you have anything coming up as far as work or illustrations coming out that you'd like to share? It's harder with editorial illustration. There's usually not like a big one big release, but
There is a big project that I just wrapped up. But I mean, it'll be published over, I think, in August. It might be one of the biggest editorial jobs I've done. But it'll come out and I'll promote it then.
yeah.
Rather not jinx it because I've worked with some of the clients where I'm doing a cover for them maybe, and I'm really excited about it, and they send in a final, but they go with something else at the last minute or something. And it just lies on the cutting room floor and worthless and
Oh.
so sad. But you see why they made those editorial decisions. So I'll just keep quiet, I guess, about
Yeah,
that.
I understand.
But there's, with editorial, there are just a lot of jobs, a lot of pagers, half pagers, kind of.
Well, where can people follow you and your work?
They can follow me in a lot of places, on Twitter at Daniel Hertzberg, Instagram at Daniel Hertzberg, on Facebook also, all the social media sites. Except for Snapchat. I have no idea about Snapchat whatsoever. I feel like I need to keep abreast with everything. I really should take more of an interest with a lot of these things. But there are just so many sites. It seems like every 6 months there's another site that I should get my work on. Yeah. It's constant. So many social media sites.
But I do think that if the work is there, if your work is good, that sometimes that doesn't matter as much as we like to make it out. Like I feel like I know some really incredible illustrators who have like really bad websites and things like that, but they're getting tons of work because
Right.
they're so good.
Right. It's the work. It's the work, bottom line. Right. That's all that matters, really. And you're totally right. We can get more work by keeping up to date.
Yes, yeah.
A slick looking site or something. It's the work, bottom line.
Yeah.
You're right. It's just a constant struggle to update everything. To update our brains, like programs and things that we should be using instead of these older things that you just got introduced to.
Yeah. Well, this has been it's been really nice chatting with you, and I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Michelle, I'm honored. Thank you very, very much for this opportunity to talk about the struggles of parenthood. Thank you. This opportunity and for